So I want to begin by reciting one verse from the Sad Goswami Astakam. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Saddharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakari No Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Badara Venda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Bande Rupa Sanatano Ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So this verse gives us a background, something about the Goswamis. How Lord Chaitanya sent them here to Vrindavan to... Actually, Lord Chaitanya, in his instructions to Rupa and Sanatan, he gave them a concept. He told them that actually, above the four purusarthas, this dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, above these four goals that all Vedantists strive for, is prema. And in all the scriptures, there's evidence of this. It's not just a statement of sentiment or of imagination. He says this... There is Shastric evidence for this, that there's a fifth goal, and it is the ultimate goal. And so he said, now you guys, you go to Vrindavan, and you study all the scriptures, and you scrutinizingly study all the scriptures, and you find the evidence. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, said, the evidence is there, it's in Shastra. So you look for it, and you study all the books, and you compile... You gather the information that points towards this ultimate goal of prema bhakti, and you make literatures, bhakti shastras, which point to the ultimate goal of life. So that's what they're being glorified for this in this verse. They're expert in scrutinizingly studying all the Vedic literatures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of everyone. So this is their great glory, that they sacrificed all of their time and energy to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya to compile these bhakti shastras. And at that time, Vrindavan was not like it is now, where you feel a little hot, you feel a little disturbed, you go across the street and sit in the sidewalk cafe under a fan and have a 7-Up or something. It wasn't like that then, right? It was a jungle. Actually, it's explained that the Mohammedans, they had destroyed the Janmastan in Mathura, and they had their attempt to eradicate the worship, well, all Vedic practices. They completely leveled the Janmastan in Mathura, and they prohibited any kind of visitation to this holy place. They were trying to cover the holy places for all the Hindus. And so 500 years went by with no activity in Vrindavan after they destroyed the temple. It's explained that it was completely overgrown. There were no roads, there was only a few aborigine people living in the jungle. When Lokanath Goswami was the first to come, sent by Lord Chaitanya, it's explained that it was a jungle that had been untouched for 500 years. So it was a wilderness. There were wild animals, tigers even. And so when Rupa and Sanatan came here, the six Goswamis came here, it was not an easy task. It was not like it is today. So they made a great sacrifice to come here and study and assimilate, gather and assimilate and expand this knowledge Lord Chaitanya ordered them to follow. So one of the literatures is this skimpy looking book. Not much, this Sri Upadesamrita, Nectar of Instruction. Only 11 verses. But we should understand that these 11 verses are, like he says, Rita, Upadesamrita, Amrit. It is the boiled down nectar of their study. The evidence that they found in all the revealed scriptures has been condensed into these 11 verses. And these 11 verses take us from the beginning all the way to the end of what is the purpose of human life. So we should not, even though it's a very small looking book, only 11 verses, we should not minimize it. It's actually the result of great endeavor and great study and great brilliance and genius. So I'd like to begin by reading Srila Prabhupada's purport. Now I'm expecting that all of you, during this course, you will do the reading of the verses and the purports on your own. So like today, I just want to cover the preface and have some discussion. And if we have time, then we'll begin discussing text number one. So like today, we'll cover the preface, and whatever we don't cover in text one, then tonight you read so that you're familiar with the text and the purport. I'm going to just select points from Srila Prabhupada's purports, and I'm going to select examples from Bhagavatam illustrating different points that he makes. So Srila Prabhupada writes in his preface, "The Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, of whom the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are all followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." I'm just paraphrasing. Then he says, he quotes Narottam Das Thakur. He says, "When I am eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna." So it is not expected that one can understand anything about Radha Krishna unless he hears these literatures composed by the six Goswamis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. Prabhupada calls it a science. Bhakti Yoga is a science. It is something that has to be applied methodically. And it can be... science means that it can be verified. It can be verified by the senses. Pratyaksha. So, of course, the science of bhakti is coming from shabda, is coming from scripture. But it is a science because it can be verified. Say, "The most exalted of all the activities of Lord Krishna are his pastimes of conjugal love with the gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the mood of Srimati Radharani, the best of the gopis. Therefore, to understand the mission of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in his footsteps, one must very seriously follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis, Sri Rupa, Sanatan, Bhattan, Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raghunath." So he says we must very seriously follow. Not haphazardly follow, but we should very seriously follow. Srila Rupa Goswami was the leader of all the Goswamis, and to guide our activities, he gave us this Upadesamrita, the nectar of instruction, to follow. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left behind him the 8 verses known as Shikshastak, Rupa Goswami gave us Upadesamrita so we may become pure Vaishnavas. In all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Everyone within this material world is engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself to the platform of goodness, sattva-guna, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and then everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. Now this statement seems like a mystical statement, that if you just follow, everything will be revealed. But it is scientific, because he's saying
we must adopt the mode of goodness, sattva-guna. So a characteristic of sattva-guna is that it gives enlightenment. From sattva-guna, knowledge can be acquired. So he's saying we must develop sattva-guna, the qualities of sattva-guna. And if we don't, we must, so that we can develop knowledge, so we can make ourselves receptive, so that knowledge, we can acquire knowledge, we can understand knowledge, and we can put it into practice. Without acquiring the mode of goodness, this will not take place. So sometimes, well, it's very often the misconception that we have a misconception. I hear very often the misconception that a Vaishnava, a devotee, he's already situated beyond the modes of nature. He's situated beyond goodness, passion, and ignorance. And of course, this is a factual statement if we take the definition of Vaishnava or devotee to indicate the topmost one. Sometimes this word devotee is used to designate an uttama adhikari, and sometimes the word devotee, because it's a very broad general term, can be used to refer to someone who chants the holy name of Krishna, but still has, maybe he may not even be able to follow the regulative principles. Still, we regard him as a devotee because he chants. So when we hear that the devotee is beyond the modes of nature, that is a reference to one who is well on his way, one who is perhaps at the level, he's past nishta, at least, ruchi. He has to be in that area before we can consider that he may be free from the influence of the modes of nature. Practically, he should be further along. But sometimes, because we don't discriminate, we think this term devotee applies to all those persons who are practicing or chanting, then we have this idea sometimes that we don't need to cultivate goodness, because we have neck beads, we have tilak, we have dhoti, we have shaved head, and therefore we're beyond the modes of nature. But this is a misconception. So he's saying here, Prabhupada is saying, that we must cultivate goodness. And of course you're learning from Bhagavad Gita. You'll learn in the 14th chapter, and of course even in the second chapter there's references to the modes of nature. So you're learning, obviously, and in your own private study, you're familiar with the characteristics of sattva-guna, hopefully, and you're endeavoring to cultivate these things. Cleanliness, regulation, peacefulness, study, so on. So now Prabhupada writes, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. So this is a very important statement, very short sentence, but he points to the attitude. Or in another place he calls this bhav, the mood. Sometimes he calls it one's nature. So the mood in which one performs devotional service is what propels him forward. If it is done in the proper attitude, then one can progress very quickly. If we perform an act in an improper attitude, then we're like spinning our wheels, not moving forward. The wheels are turning, the engine is running, but with no progress. So the important thing is the attitude. Sometimes we hear, if you serve Krishna in Vrindavan, then you'll make so much more advancement than if you serve Krishna in Russia or in America. Sometimes we hear this. Or sometimes we hear that if you take initiation from this particular devotee, if you get diksha from this particular devotee, then you'll make very rapid advancement. Attend the morning program without missing every day for 20 years, then you will make very rapid progress. Sometimes we hear all these different criteria, or These are proper criteria. These are factors. But Prabhupada points to the topmost factor is one's attitude. Because as we know, one can chant the holy name for many births. And if he doesn't rid himself of an offensive attitude, then he doesn't get the fruit from the chanting. Right? If one doesn't have the right attitude upon doing devotional service, then he performs devotional service influenced by ignorance and passion. And that is not so pleasing to Krishna. So he says, Prabhupada is then emphasizing, we have to cultivate the proper attitude. That is where we should focus our energy. Trying to do whatever service we're doing, we should try to do it with the proper attitude. Now, you are here to study. So you should study with a proper attitude. So why should you, what would indicate a proper attitude of study? Who can say? Or what would, let's say, who can say what is an improper attitude of study? Prabhu? Not practicing. Okay. I'm studying, I'm learning the verses, but I'm not interested in practicing them. So that's an improper attitude. But then what would be motivating a person to undergo the austerity of study? To make advancement? Well, that's that. Okay, then that seems to be a proper attitude. That's a proper attitude. So that's very good. So that is a proper attitude so that one can actually progress to a higher level of spiritual advancement. But my question is, if one is learning, if one is undergoing the austerity to learn, and he has an improper attitude, what would be motivating him, or what is an example of an ill motive? Let's say a person is studying, but for the wrong motive. What could be the wrong motive? Aravind? Show people what? Okay. Good. Good point. Then one may study to make a display of being learned. One may study to appear learned. Why? Because in the society of devotees, if one knows Sanskrit, if one can recite many slokas, he is respected. And so one may study not so he can make the knowledge his own, like you're saying. That's a proper. The proper thing is to study and become the instruction. You know, take. You know, like when we read these verses, we want to be. We want to acquire these qualities of these devotees that are described in Shastra, not just tell entertaining stories about them and attract people's attention to ourselves. But we want to actually make these, these devotees described in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, we want them to be our role models. We want to make our lives like theirs. So we want to study and put this into practice so that we can become good devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Not so that we can appear. And when now I walk into the temple, I'm offered a garland. Or I'm offered the Mahaprasad plate. Or I'm offered a nice facility in the sannyasi room. Because I appear learned. But I live two lives. When I'm on stage, I appear like a devotee. And when I'm off stage, when I'm off by myself, then I don't have to put on this show. No. So we have to develop a proper attitude. And the attitude is, for one, learning is to acquire the knowledge to put into use himself. And if we're teaching the knowledge, our purpose then... See, a person can also teach the knowledge with an improper attitude. Right? I could be teaching in order to, say, get some dakshin, or get some respect, or get some followers. To hear my name followed by Kijai, Kijai. One can teach with an improper attitude. One can teach so that he appears learned. Or one can teach, but the proper attitude is, one should teach what he has understood for trying to help others acquire the same realization. One should teach only to try to give this knowledge to others so that they can incorporate it in their lives and go forward. And that is a proper attitude. And if one teaches in that attitude, then this is very favorable for his progress. So in all of our activities, in learning and teaching and serving and cleaning and getting up and going to Mangal Artik, in chanting our japa and all these activities, we should be checking that we have the proper attitude. We should be doing it with a favorable attitude. A follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. Vaishnavas are generally known as Goswamis. In Vrindavan, this is the title by which the director of each temple is known. One who wants to become a perfect devotee of Krishna must become a Goswami. Go means the senses, and Swami means the master. Unless one controls his senses and mind, one cannot become a Goswami. To achieve the highest success in life by becoming a Goswami, and then a pure devotee of the Lord, one must follow the instructions known as Upadesamrita, which have been given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, and Lalita Madhava. But Upadesamrita constitutes the first instructions for neophyte devotees. One should follow these instructions very strictly. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful. Hare Krishna. Signed, His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, September 20th, 1975, on Vishrup Mahotsav at Krishna Balaram Mandir, Raman Reti, Vrindavan, India. Okay, any questions on this? On the preface, what we've discussed thus far?
Is that a different use of the word?
Different use of the word.
Same word, but different
use. It's like we hear in Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam, Tajatyante Kalevram, 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada translates, whatever state of being, he translates bhav as state of being, which can also mean attitude, or one's nature, or mood. So bhava bhakti is a stage that is achieved, and so bhava has different definitions like almost all words. Any other comments or questions? Arvind Prabhu? An attitude which is aimed solely at pleasing Krishna, no other motive. That is the bhav we want to cultivate. Right now, our bhav is we have so many other interests. So we want to, the process of sadhana takes away those things gradually. So we want to cleanse ourselves of these improper moods, improper attitudes. I want to lead the kirtan. Why? Because there's some nice young girls in the back who want to get married. And therefore, get out of the way, give me the microphone. I want to be right in the front. And I'm saying, and I may be even thinking, I want to glorify Krishna. But really, I want to show off, if my attitude is wrong, really, I want to show off how well I play musical instruments and how well I can sing and how well I can jump up and wiggle my hips or how well I can get everybody fired up and how well I can enthuse everyone. Of course, if one is actually singing kirtan, leading kirtan with a proper attitude, all these things will fall into place. He will inspire people. But by use of charisma, this is also a shadow of real
excitement can be produced. So, no, I should want to lead the kirtan. You should all want to lead the kirtan, but for the purpose of glorifying Radha and Krishna, not for attracting attention to ourselves. Or I should want to dress the deity. Sometimes people fight. I've seen sometimes people fight because they want to offer Mangal Artik. They want to offer Artik. And somebody says, no, it's my turn to offer Artik. No. Then two pujaris start fighting because they want to offer Artik. But why should they fight? In other words, if our attitude is, I want to please Krishna, I want to offer Artik to please Krishna, then, you know, if someone else is qualified to offer Artik, what am I concerned about? If someone else is qualified and he can offer a nice Artik to Krishna, Krishna is pleased by that, what does it matter that I don't get to do it? No, because I may get some subtle satisfaction of being seen at the end of the Artik. You know, everybody coming up, give me. And I go, yes, don't touch me. Yes. And I go like this. And so I get a subtle satisfaction of people coming and here, take this garland, and then I got 2 drops of water on it. So to make sure that I don't get contaminated by all the pilgrims. And like this. So I may want to do Artik, I may want to serve the deity because it makes me feel important. That may be my mood, that may be my attitude. And therefore, get out of the way, it's my service. So we should check when we're doing our study, when we're doing our cleaning, we're doing all of our activities, we should be examining what is my attitude. And we're going to see. Actually, if you don't see improper attitudes, you should understand that you are not being favored by Krishna. If you see that I have so many other attitudes that are improper, then I say you are being blessed by Krishna because he's revealing them to you. He's revealing them to you so you can start the grueling work of getting rid of them. But if you're thinking, I don't have, mines are all perfectly okay, then I doubt, unless you're a pure devotee and then that will be demonstrated by other activities, then I suspect Krishna is not pleased with you and thus he's not revealing to you your shortcomings. Because in order to progress in devotional service, one has to have a very accurate estimate of his position. And that's one thing, actually, many devotees who come to Vrindavan, they say that Vrindavan has that potency to make you see things about yourself that you don't want to see, actually. So that is Krishna's mercy. So therefore, we should expect that we have improper attitudes. We've come here, we're just beginning devotional service. We should expect that we have them, and we should be introspectively looking for them, searching them out, and then doing the work of uprooting them and getting rid of them. All right, anything else on this topic of mood? Yes, Prabhu? You're saying that simple people understand very easily the mission of Lord Chaitanya?
Yeah. So what is the
Well, I disagree with this statement. I don't think people easily understand. They may say, just like, let's just take one word, love of God. Let's say love. Now, when you say love, or when someone you're preaching to, and you say the mission of Lord Chaitanya is to teach love of God, they say, yeah, I understand. But let's examine, what do they understand by the word love? Just like we say, some man will say today, I love ice cream. If you go across the street, you'll hear someone say, oh, I love ice cream. So that term love is not what we say, it's what we mean when we say love of God. Or another man may say, he may say to a pretty girl, a young man may say to a pretty young girl, I love you. But what he's actually experiencing is lust. So very often we use terms to indicate different meanings. Very often we use the same word, but we're talking about something entirely different. So if someone who has not studied Bhakti Shastra, and he says, I understand what Lord Chaitanya's mission is, I doubt he actually understands. I'm convinced he thinks he does. He's not lying. But I'm convinced that it is a very difficult thing to understand unless you study Shastra, Bhakti Shastra. Just like, because we know love, we know when we say love of God, or you were talking about the Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional or pure love of God. He went through, in other words, there's many, many, many things in there. No motive. It has to be performed favorably without expectation of return. So even among mundane poets, they don't have this concept of love. Or some do, but the majority do not. They think love is a feeling. They think that, well, I fell in love. I saw her, she saw me, I raised my eyebrows, she looked down, and from then on we were in love. Right? But love is not acquired by falling into it. That is lust. Lust comes like that. Love does not come like that. Love is the result of experience. Actually, love is a verb. Love means activity. That's why Prabhupada says bhakti. When he's translating bhakti, he says, not devotion. Devotional service. Because if you have devotion, you cannot have devotion without having it manifest in some expression. You have to express it. If you have devotion, it has to be expressed. So devotional service means action, activity. So love is like that. If you love somebody, then you will do something for them that will help them, and you will not expect anything in return. So you do not develop love for someone very easily. What precedes love? Anyway, we'll discuss this more when it comes up in the fourth verse. But my point to you is that I question how well a non-devotee or even a neophyte devotee can understand the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So I take Prabhupada's words very literally there, that without going through some of this Goswami literature, that we'll not clearly understand Lord Chaitanya's mission. Okay, so let's take... Well, Prabhupada alludes to it in the next paragraph. He says the first business of someone in spiritual life, what does he say? He says advancement in Krishna. No, he says, what does he say? Okay, in all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. So now he's referring, or we could say he's making reference to the first verse, Vacho Vegam Manasakurola Vegam. That this is the business. That one must make an effort to control the urges of the six pushings, or the speech and so forth. So now, if I control what I say, my speech, but then I'm going to affect my actions. In other words, it's explained that there's even the materialists, wise materialists, they say, watch what you think. Watch what you think, because your thoughts become words. Watch what you say, because your words become actions. Watch what you do, because your actions become habits. And watch your actions, because your habits become character. And your character then, in other words, that becomes your destiny. That determines how you will act and whether you will go up or go down in your life. So therefore, if I control my words, that means, subtly, it means I must control my thoughts. And so by that kind of control, I'm starting to discipline myself. So what is discipline? It is a symptom of goodness. Regulation is a symptom of goodness. So now I'm starting to practice goodness. By making this effort, I'm disciplining myself, I'm regulating myself, I'm being introspective, because I'm thinking before I speak. So now I'm exercising sense control, or I'm beginning to practice it. In the beginning, I may do it for half an hour a day, and then I forget. But as I practice, I should be, with every step, in a controlled attitude. And then finally, when I practice that long enough, it becomes natural for me, and I don't have to worry about it. Just like riding a bicycle. At first, you're balancing, but after a while, you don't have to hold on anymore. You don't have to think about it anymore. So we discipline ourselves, and we fix ourselves in some activity of goodness, some regulation, some control, and gradually, we become fixed there. Gradually, it becomes natural, and then, in other words, this statement is not, in other words, the reason we want to become situated in goodness is not, we don't want to stop there. We want to cultivate goodness so that we can acquire knowledge about Krishna and Radha and Krishna's activities. We want to make ourselves receptive to acquire knowledge about Radha and Krishna. So the mode of goodness, the platform of goodness, is like a stepping stone for us. We want to get there so we can acquire knowledge about Krishna, and ultimately we want to go beyond the modes of nature. But in order to understand the intimate activities of Radha and Krishna, we have to first reach the platform of goodness, shake off ignorance and passion, achieve goodness, cultivate goodness, get in that knowledge, discipline ourselves, and then we'll have the proper adhikari, we'll have the proper qualification. So you're saying, if one is performing devotional service in the improper attitude, is he a pretender? Well, yes, he's pretending. But we should understand, he may be pretending consciously, and he may be pretending unconsciously. Let's say I want to embezzle money. Okay? So being a pujari is very easy to embezzle money. At least in some temples. Because everyone is coming and giving money. Everyone's throwing money on the altar, you've seen? They throw money. And even sometimes they buy a garland outside, they put some money inside. I saw a guy, he put a silver coin of Lakshmi. You know, he bought a silver coin downtown in a jewelry shop. 80 rupees. One little coin has Lakshmi Devi on it. So he put inside the garland, and he put some cloth, and he's giving it to the altar. Now I'm the pujari, so I get, and I feel the coin, no one's seeing. So I take the garland out. I take the money, and then I take the garland out in front of everyone. I sprinkle the garland to purify it. And I make a big show of putting the garland on. So someone outside may say, oh, just see what devotion, how clean the pujari is. See what devotion they're serving. One can see like that. But if I'm there thinking, I want that position so I can embezzle money, then I'm knowingly cheating. I'm knowingly pretending. Right? So I'm a number one rascal. If I'm doing it knowingly, I'm a number one rascal. But I can also be doing something unknowingly. I don't think I can steal money unknowingly. But I may be fighting to keep that service because it gives me a feeling of self-worth. And I may not be aware of it. So like this, you know, the saying, Prabhupada quoted that, what is it? Any Bengalis here?
Anyone knows Bengali? Well, what is it? Adi Bhakti Chorera Lakshan? Means too much devotion. Is it Adi Bhakti? Aro Bhakti. Chora Lakshan means he's the symptom of a thief. Too much devotion. In other words, a display of devotion is actually a symptom of a thief. So if I'm saying, no, I may be a thief. If I am knowingly cheating to embezzle money, then I'm number one rascal. But I may also be fighting to do the service to satisfy a more subtle need, a subtle desire, which in which case I may not be aware that that's why I'm doing it. If you accuse me of it, I may not be aware of it and I'll deny it. Just like sometimes we see a parent, a man who has a son, he may get chastised by his spiritual authority. Let's say Krishna Balaram gets chastised by his spiritual master. But he did something wrong. Okay. But he's frustrated because I got the sauce. So now he goes home to his wife and sons. And he starts chastising his sons. And they haven't done anything wrong. But because he's feeling I got the sauce, unconsciously he may give the sauce to someone who doesn't deserve it. And he may not be aware. And if I say, why are you chastising your son? He didn't do anything wrong. Well, a father's duty is to discipline the son. And then he can quote Shastra and say, Chanakya Pandit says that up from 5 to 15, he must be chastised. And he can justify it. But he may unconsciously be taking out his own frustrations on his son, unknowingly. I know he doesn't do that. I'm just using this example. So sometimes we can deceive ourselves. We can deceive others and we can also deceive ourselves. But in both cases, we're pretenders or we're cheaters to greater or lesser degrees. It's not overnight they're going to give up cheating. It's a long process of giving up cheating. And that's why I say, if I become aware of a subtle way that I'm cheating, then this is a sign Krishna's pleased with me because he's making me aware of how I can improve my service, my attitude. Well, then, who's in control of the mind? In other words, if I say, well, it's just my mind, I can't do anything, don't blame me, I'm innocent, it's my mind, then that statement indicates that I'm subservient to the mind. I have no power over the mind. But that's not our case. That's not the case. Bhagavad Gita says, in third chapter, that above the mind is what? The intelligence. And above the intelligence is the soul. One must control the lower self by the higher self. So if I'm saying I can't, I'm relinquishing responsibility to perform my duties as a human being. I'm copping out. Sometimes we hear in India and Malaysia, if I slip up and I do something that is improper, I fall victim of Maya. Then we say, oh, someone must be doing Tantra on me. Now, someone may, okay. But sometimes we use it as an excuse that to relieve ourselves of the responsibility of actually subduing our mind with our intelligence. Well, like it says, it is again another piece of wisdom, not from our Shastra, but from the conventional world. They say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Means good intentions in and of themselves are not enough. And even in our own history, if you ask the GBC, they've issued apologies for, say, they've issued apologies to the whole society for, you know, right after Srila Prabhupada departed, what, 22 years ago? 23 years ago. Right after his departure, with all good intentions, they established a system of these, you know, Vartmanacharyas, zonal acharyas. They establish a system with all good intentions that later they realized was a mistake and created all kinds of friction among the God brothers, among the gurus, all kinds of friction and turmoil inside the whole society. They didn't plan to do that. They thought, well, this would be a very good way, a very organized way to proceed. I'm convinced they had good intentions. But we see good intentions in and of themselves are not sufficient. The good intentions must be guided by knowledge, by Shastra specifically. Then we'll avoid getting off the track. When good intentions are coupled with discrimination and Shastra, then we're in less danger of making mistake. Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. When good intentions are guided, are checked by Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, then we're stand on firm ground. Okay, anything else? Of the what case?
Pretender.
There, if one is weak in controlling the senses, if one has bad habits, that does not disqualify him from performing devotional service. That's not a disqualification. It's like if we say you have bad habits, you cannot practice bhakti yoga. That is like saying you are sick, you cannot come in the hospital. Why can't I come in the hospital? Because you're sick. No, the hospital is a place to cure disease. It is expected if you come to practice bhakti yoga that you have bad habits, you have weaknesses. Right? So these are not disqualifications. But what disqualifies us is not the bad habit, but denying that we have it or covering up that we have it. Dishonesty. In other words, let's say I'm a candidate for initiation. Everyone's pushing me to take initiation from so-and-so. But I'm having trouble following. I'm not chanting 16 rounds. Okay? One time, yeah, I didn't bring my bead bag, but one time we were in New York. We used to all chant japa. In the bhakta program, we would all chant japa together. And I knew one bhakta was cheating. And he had his hand in his bead bag. It's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, you know, like this. And I went over and grabbed his bead bag. It's empty. His bag is empty. Because I knew, because I had his beads, he left his beads in my office. So I thought, this man is pretending. And he knows he's pretending. He's faking it. Yeah, and he knows he's faking it. So, let's say I'm not chanting 16 rounds, but no one knows. And then they ask me, are you chanting 16 rounds? Let's say my guru, who's giving me initiation, are you chanting 16 rounds? I say, yes. In other words, I'm covering my defect. While I cover my defect, not the defect, but the fact that I'm covering it compounds the defect. And that makes me remain defective. That actually disqualifies me. If I say, Maharaj, I want to take initiation, but somehow I can't discipline myself to do 16 rounds a day, I'm still qualified. And what happens when I tell my spiritual master that? He understands this man is honest. You know the story of, what's the name, guys? Satvakama? And there's a Puranic story. You know that story? It's about Gautam Rishi. Gautam Rishi is a Brahmin, and he only accepts Brahmin students in his Gurukul. In his home, one boy comes to, because he wanted to be tutored by, I think it's Gautama, right? So Gautama says, and tell me your What do they call? Tell me your jati. You tell me your gotra. And he says, you know, he's asking him, tell me your family line, because just his name will indicate what caste he's in. So he says, I don't know my gotra. He says, all I know is that I'm the son of, I think his mother's name was Satyakama. All I know is I'm the son of Satyakama. I don't know who my father is. My mother, she was a maidservant. She had affairs with several men. And I'm sorry to say, Guru Maharaj, I don't know who my father is. So I can't tell you my gotra. So Gautama Muni says, okay, I accept you as my student. You have Brahminical tendencies. Because you're completely honest. You're completely straightforward and honest, which is a Brahminical tendency. So in other words, he's looking at the nature of the person. He's saying, this man, he is a lover of truth. He lives by the truth. He doesn't hide the truth. He doesn't try to appear like something he's not. So he admitted him, even though he had some defect. So this indicates, in other words, the defect, this is a worser defect. The fact that I try to cover my defects. This actually prevents one from progress. Whereas the other one, if I say, I have this defect, I have this weakness, then one becomes favored. By any Vaishnava will favor such a person and give more attention, give more guidance. Give more blessings to help that person, because he knows here's an honest man, here's an honest person, here's a sincere person who's struggling, and I want to help him. Sometimes we're afraid when we see a pretender. I'm not following. If you saw a pretender, and what was your reaction? Or you saw that you were pretending. So you disempower yourself. In other words, you feel like, well, I'm not worthy to practice Bhakti Yoga. I should just give up and just go back to Maya.
Not go back to Maya.
Okay.
You are there, but you are in the back.
Okay, so what's wrong with being in the back?
Okay.
I understand. I got it now. In other words, we become like Arjuna. First chapter, Arjuna, I cannot fight, I cannot do this. He's renouncing based on, but he's renouncing his duty. Just let's say right now, after you complete your Bhakti Shastri, you're going to go back to Morocco. Huh? Okay. Wherever you go, let's say you don't go back to Morocco, okay, you don't go. But you go somewhere, you go to another temple, and they say, hey, today, after Mangal Arati, they make an announcement. The temple president says, the temple commander says, we want to welcome this great soul who just spent 4 months, 5 months in Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham, studying from all the great Vaishnavas there. Now he got his Bhakti Shastri degree. Ki jai. Okay. Now after the announcements, somebody comes up to you and says, Prabhu, what is the first sloka of Nectar of Devotion? Or can you please tell me, can you please define what is pure devotional service? And you say, oh, I'm too fallen, I cannot say. Right? Then you would be shirking your duty, right? Because now you've been taught. You are qualified that much. You are that much qualified. Now if you renounce your duty, then you are renouncing because you're influenced by... This renunciation would be renunciation in the mode of ignorance and passion. Is not recommended. So therefore, if we find that, okay, I don't want to be a pretender, that is very good. But we have to make sure, Maya tricks us to become a pretender and to hide our defects. Maya tricks us. Maya can trick us the other way. Oh, that now you're so disempowered because of these defects, you're not worthy of actually performing devotional service. So that's Maya tricking us at the other extreme. So we have to know from Shastra that I am qualified to perform devotional service, and I should perform it with all enthusiasm, but I should not pretend. It's not that I have a tendency to pretend, therefore I do not perform service. No, I should perform service and concentrate on giving up the pretensive attitude. Otherwise, we're being tricked this way or that way by Maya, both ways. I've heard people say that if you see a defect, that means you've got it. You've heard this? I would like to examine this, because I question this. Or if I see a person's pretending, that means I'm a pretender and I should just keep my mouth shut. That protects the pretender, no? But what I've noticed is when I give a class thinking they're going to cheer at the end of the class and they're going to come and pat me on the back and they're going to give me a garland and say, Prabhu, thank you so much for this nice class, you know. If I give a class expecting that, and I have, and I do, right? I'm not happy with that. When I become aware of that anartha in me, and I attend a class, I can detect if someone else has it. Precisely because I can detect it in myself. Do you follow what I'm saying? I can detect it because I'm tasting it. But in other words, my seeing it in him is not causing it in me. That's not the fact that I see it in another person is not the cause. Because I have it, I can see another person has it.
What if your subconscious is objecting?
Then you're making an offense. Then you're making a mistake. If you're projecting it on him, then you're not perceiving accurately. Well, this is each and every one of our work. In other words, we have to test our perception. Okay? We have to test it. Our senses are imperfect, but that does not mean that we're wrong 100% of the time. That's not what it means. It means that, okay, I have this perception, so let me test it. Let me measure it with Shastra, if possible, with sadhus, if possible, with guru, if possible. Or with sadhu, shastra, and guru. Let me test it. So let's say I have an intuition that this person is leading the kirtan to attract women. I cannot prove someone else's attitude, right? I cannot lay out proof for something so subtle. I cannot prove it. So therefore, you know, what living in India has taught me, that if you cannot prove something, don't accuse anybody. Right? You don't accuse somebody of something you cannot prove. So then we don't accuse somebody. But intuitively I feel this person is leading kirtan for some ulterior motive. Why? Because I know I've done it and I perceive it. Okay. So now what is to prevent me from going to the person privately and revealing my mind and saying, you know, Prabhu, you led a nice kirtan. I like to lead kirtan also, but you know what? What I detect in myself, sometimes when I lead kirtan, I detect that I'm trying to attract the opposite sex. I detect that I'm trying to show off my musical prowess. You ever feel that way, Prabhu? Yes or no? And if he's honest, if you have a relationship with him and he reveals his mind, then you may say, if he says, yeah, it happened to me today, and you say, okay, my intuition was correct today. You test it. Or you go to someone else and you say, what was your perception of the kirtan today? Were you happy with that? Were you satisfied with the class that was given today? What was your perception? You don't even have to go about it directly, but you go about trying to test your perceptions and appraise how accurate they are. And then gradually you know how much you can rely on them. And perhaps you never want to rely on them fully. But you know, okay, 50%, 80%, 90%, you have a more accurate conception of yourself and your faculties. And like this, you practice. And then when you get a, when you perceive, when you use your senses to perceive, then you know how, you have a better understanding of their accuracy. And as you progress in devotional service, if you're progressing, they should be becoming more accurate because of your experience. So you build, you grow like this. So today I may have this much confidence in my perception. But we see, again, taking the example of Arjuna, who is you and me. Arjuna is every man who takes up the spiritual path. Arjuna had no confidence. In the beginning, I have no confidence I can fight. I can't even pick up my bow. At the end, after hearing Krishna's instructions, I have full confidence. I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to follow your instructions. I'm ready to fight an army much greater than mine. I'm ready, I mean, or much larger than mine. I'm ready to fight. And I'm fearless. So by hearing Bhagavad Gita, you develop confidence. We're going to hear in Rupa Goswami's the six things that one must have in order to achieve pure devotional service. One of them is confidence. So we must have confidence, self-confidence, that I can attain it. I can attain the goal. I may be weak, I may be fallen, I may have so many defects, but I have faith that Shastra says, I can accomplish it. Mrigraya the hunter accomplished it. So many people accomplished it in Shastra. I can also accomplish it. We have to have that confidence. Without it, we remain disempowered. Okay, usually one becomes proud if he gets praised excessively. That's one of the, you know, in other words, pride means somebody, generally a group of people, recognize you have qualities superior to the normal person. And they're praising you for them. So, if you accept the praise, let's say they say that you memorize slokas faster than anyone in the class, right? Or you have some talent the rest of us do not have. And we all glorify you for it. So if you think, yes, I'm a blessed person, then I'm blessed, I'm superior to the others, then you will become infected with pride and your devotional service will be, there will be a big obstacle in your devotional path. Whereas if you think, well, I have a certain talent, Krishna has given me a talent. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Rasoham apsukonteya, prabhasmi shashishurayo. Pranava sarva vedeshu. What's the last line? Shabda kam. Anyway, he says, I am the ability in man. Krishna says, Krishna is the ability in man. So this ability that I have, that everyone is glorifying, is coming from Krishna. So let me take their praise and pass it on to Krishna, and let me not accept it as mine. That will avoid. You will avoid becoming proud. If you see things in the right perspective, they may be illusioned thinking the greatness is in you, but you should not be illusioned by that. That's why it is explained in Shastra that one should not accept unqualified disciples. This is a very severe warning, because unqualified disciples means they offer praise. They see greatness where there's no greatness. And they offer praise when it's inappropriate. And they infect you. And they surround you. And they don't let anyone else, they don't let any critical feedback come in. And they insulate you. And then you start to live in a world that is controlled. You only receive information that is filtered. Then you're in trouble. If you surround yourself by yes men, then this is the symptom. This is the symptom of collapse. In the history of man, when a leader is surrounded by only people who will repeat, or rather will reflect his thoughts, you can bet 100% that government or that leadership is on, it's already on the verge of collapse. So therefore, in his devotional service, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, there's many anarthas that one can acquire by performing bhakti. So we have to be, again, centered in Shastra. We have to be guiding ourselves by Guru, Shastra and Sadhu. And when someone praises you, and you should understand, they're praising Krishna, this talent that is actually Krishna. Why should I become puffed up? Because Krishna has given me, he can take it away. I knew a devotee, one of my godbrothers, who was a very talented musician. He used to lead kirtan very nicely. And then one day, it was in Toronto. Who's from Toronto? Dharma Pran. One day he had a stroke. And he lost his musical ability, practically completely. He was an extremely talented musician. And he's still a very nice devotee. He's still serving Krishna because of great sincerity. But he had a stroke. He couldn't move it for some time. He couldn't move his half of his face and half of his body. He couldn't move. He was paralyzed for some time. So he was not an example of a proud devotee. But he's an example of how Krishna can remove your talent away in 1 second. So why be proud of it? Why be proud of something you have? Because it's just any second it can be gone. I remember one time in Seattle, there was a man I was a bhakti leader. And this one guy used to study Bhagavad Gita. He lived outside. He likes to play the flute. He used to go to the park on Sunday and Saturday. Everybody's smoking dope and he'd play the flute. And then he would come to the bhakti classes and all day he would chant and serve in the temple. But he wouldn't move in the temple. So one bhakti told him, "Prabhu, why don't you move in?" He said, "Well, I just can't give up flute playing. And if I join the bhakti program, I can't play the flute." At that time, we were very strict with that. We were actually very narrow-minded. There's nothing wrong with playing the flute. We know other people that play the flute, right? So it's how you play it. It's not playing it, but it's how you play it. The mood in which you play it. The attitude in which you play it in. But we were very immature. And so, no music. That's it. So someone said to him, your attachment to flute playing is preventing you from making devotional advancement. It's preventing you from moving in the temple. He says, one bhakta told him, if you are not careful, you're praying to Krishna, please engage me in your service with your chanting. Your flute playing is preventing you from doing more service. If you pray too sincerely, he's going to take away your flute playing. That's what this bhakta preached on this. And in a few days he came and someone had he got in a fight and someone punched him in his mouth and his lips were all swollen and he couldn't play the flute. So he thought, well, maybe I'm chanting too nicely. Either I have to give up chanting, or I have to give up coming to the temple, or I have to join. So he joined. He increased his practice. Although, in other words, I'm not saying that there may not be a direct connection in these things, but it is a fact that Krishna answers our prayers, and if we're attached to something that is making us proud, if I'm attached to something that is making me proud or is hampering my progress, and I'm sincerely praying to advance, Krishna will take it away. It is a fact. Okay, so it's time to stop. So for tomorrow, you please read text 1 in the purport, and we'll begin promptly at 10:30 discussing text 1. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Rupa Goswami Maharaj.